CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gregory Zuckerman. His new book is A Shot to Save the World, the inside story of the life or death race for a COVID-19 vaccine. We've watched the American companies, but Oxford is now teamed up with a European company, AstraZeneca. Remember, you need to R&D it. And Oxford is using the AD approach, the adenovirus approach that J&J is using. That would make it possible for one shot and not a series of shots. That would also make it possible to create a vaccine that is easily transported. That's important for the world that is not well-to-do or has an infrastructure for keeping vaccines cool as they're delivered, as we have here in North America or in Northern Europe. However, Oxford has AstraZeneca to manufacture the vaccine when they develop it. The trouble is they have also the same trouble raising money. Hill and Gilbert are very confident, perhaps too confident. At one point, Gregory, you tell the story that they were ready to send a representative to see the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. Was there reluctance on the British government's part to believe in Oxford?
Well, I think there was reluctance early on among experts, government bodies, including in the UK, to believe this thing would be serious. I mean, it took a while for most of us to acknowledge the possibility of a pandemic. And yeah, I write about early on Adrian Hill, this much detested scientist in Europe who is very ambitious, and he's got a really interesting approach to potentially save lives. He wants to create a vaccine. He and his colleague Sarah Gilbert, others do too. It took them, frankly, a few weeks also to get serious about it. There was a younger scientist that was prodding them and nudging them, and finally they got on board. But yeah, they needed the money, and it took them a little while. It's funny that one of the subplots, and I think you mentioned earlier, my whole book, it's about money. And you know, it's a book about science, obviously, but you need the money to be able to pull off the science, and it's always a struggle. So yeah, early on it was for Adrian Hill and his colleagues, but then they got the money and they were in the lead. They were the ones that were acknowledged by US bodies, UK bodies, European bodies. They were going to be the ones that were going to save us all. And they had the best shot with this approach.
They had a method others will imitate. They put phase one and phase two together. What does that mean? What is phase one, phase two, phase three? How does it work, Gregory?
So yeah, so to develop any kind of drug or vaccine, generally speaking, there are three phases. The phase one where you're testing it, and phase two as well, where you're testing it in mammals. You're testing not necessarily for efficacy, you're testing for safety. You're getting signals, you're getting signs of efficacy, but you're really just making sure they're safe and as possible, and that there are signs within mammals, monkeys, mice, etc., of creating, in this case, neutralizing antibodies, as they call them, antibodies that can be effective and protective. So you're not really sure until phase three. So all the writing I do, that the drama that leads up to the phase three trials, and there's a lot of it, these scientists from all over the world, including Adrian Hill in Oxford, they think they've got vaccines they're going to work on in the coronavirus, but they're not 100% sure until they get these phase threes.
They're being driven by the death toll. They're being driven by the fear in all the nations. This is a time when no one was traveling, or very few people were traveling, when there was lockdown routinely across the United States, across Europe, into other parts of the world that we can only guess at. They're seeing these headlines every day. The Prime Minister is about to come down with COVID-19, and he's very ill. So it's pushing everybody in to develop Oxford AstraZeneca. However, it's not really a mistake, Gregory. It's part of their need to produce a vaccine that's going to save lives. They test, I think it's phase three, on people 18 to 55. Why is that a mistake?
Well, listen, there are all kinds of arguments you can make either way. It's not clear in hindsight what they should have done. But the whole point is, You've got to test in tens of thousands of people. There was a debate how many you needed to really test, but all these efforts realized over time. You've got to reassure people. I mean, there already was worried about vaccine hesitancy. Eventually, there was even more so. They knew that if they didn't test in enough people, that there'd be concerns on the part of the public, or even more than there eventually were. So eventually, they all arrived at the conclusion that you're going to need tens of thousands of people, 30 to 40,000 or so, that were in these phase three trials.
And in testing just that narrow band, they missed out on the troubles they're going to have with older people such as myself.
Exactly. So the Oxford group didn't do a good job of including older candidates, older volunteers. There's a debate as to why. It's not important right now. But that was one of many stumbles that they made. I described a number of all others. So they were in the lead and due to this decision, but others as well. They stumbled, like I said, in this relay race. They were in the race and in the lead, and then they kind of tripped a few times.
We go to BioNTech. Now, Sahin and Tureci have the good luck of being teamed up with a big pharma giant, Pfizer. Credit Pfizer. Once they were in, they were all the way in, Gregory. They believed in the RNA, having spent years not believing in the RNA. That was a conversion process, I guess, under the pressure of the news. Is that why it happened?
Yeah. To their credit, the senior scientists, some of them within Pfizer, yes, there was some skepticism on the part about mRNA, but others were more excited. You know, it's a big place and a lot of brain power there, and there were enough people that did get convinced that Sahin and BioNTech had a shot, no pun intended, at creating an effective vaccine, and they got behind BioNTech, and frankly, we should all be thankful that they did. It wasn't clear what happened. As you suggest, early on, some of the scientists were dragging their feet and were reluctant, and it could have gone a different way. Just like I said with Moderna, maybe not getting enough money to produce these vaccines, it wasn't clear that BioNTech would find a partner. They did find one in Pfizer, and we should all be thankful.
Sahin is an individual who is a unique individual. He tried the RNA method, but he was only taking a slice of the spike protein, not the whole spike protein, which was Moderna's approach. I believe eventually they talked him out of that. But he could still be developing that, Gregory. We don't know where he's going.
Right. So that's another reason we should be grateful. There was a debate within Pfizer and between Pfizer and BioNTech, like, about how to create this vaccine and whether you want to create the entire spike protein or a part of the spike protein in the body. In the end, they decided that the entire one was the most effective route, and it worked out well. It's not clear what would happen had they chosen the different route, but there were all kinds of ways. You know, we don't appreciate these vaccines and what happened enough. It could have gone wrong in so many times, so many different ways.
We have two RNA methodologies. One, adenovirus. Now, J&J is also using the adenovirus, but they have a reason for it. This is July 2020. They're using AD26, the cold virus, and they're looking to lower success for shots because they want one shot to satisfy everyone. Do they originally, J&J, understand that their vaccine will be most successful in the developing world?
Well, I think they wanted to be the first and the best in the West as well, but they did realize that they've got an advantage with their shots and that they are cheaper, but they don't have to be kept at cold temperatures like the mRNA ones, like the Pfizer and Moderna ones. And yes, the J&J ones and the AstraZeneca ones, because they've got this different approach using this harmless virus, it's a different and unique approach, and it doesn't have to be kept in these temperatures. And it's, as a result, it's much easier to handle in poorer areas. And I think we need to acknowledge that they are playing really important roles in those countries. And I think they're going to increasingly do so in the months ahead, in the years ahead.
It's your impression then from your reporting that J&J saw that as a goal to.
Oh, that was an advantage, was something unique about their vaccine. But they also weren't sure that the others would work, the mRNA ones would work. It's a fascinating dynamic where all these competitors I write about in my book, they're racing, they're chasing each other. They want to be the first, and yet they don't want other people stumbling either, because let's say one of these vaccines was harmful, then it would have raised all kinds of questions about all the vaccines.
All right, here
and
comes
it would
the,
increase hesitancy.
Here comes the payoff. Shot to Save the World. Gregory Zuckerman is the author. This is John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.